there, everyone. Welcome back to a brand new episode of Books on the Move. My name is Danielle, and, well, you might notice that there's no sound of geese cawing. What's the word you use for geese? Not sure. No geese, no birds chirping, no sounds of the wind, no sounds of random strangers running by or riding their scooters next to me. No, it's just me in my house, pacing back and forth, as one does. And of course, talks about books. Yes, this is Books on the Move. That's pretty much the premise. If you've never listened, I'm moving in some capacity, and I talk about books. So it's going to be a fun time. And I have some fun, maybe fun's the wrong word, but certainly interesting things to share about last episode. So I have to take a deep breath. For some reason, I'm like, feels like it's all the time, but like my lung capacity is just not good and I'm barely moving, so that says a lot about me. But anyway, last episode, you might remember that I'm pretty sure I mentioned it actually, that I slipped in the mud. Yes, fun time. And basically, this could be a combination of things, but I'm sure I've mentioned on past episodes that I have scoliosis. And what that means is that walking is not difficult, but like not necessarily good for me. Like, or I shouldn't say it's not good for me. It's good for me, it's just that it can have negative effects on me, depending on my equipment, being my sneakers, the soles of my sneakers, the inserts, stuff like that. Even what I'm wearing, like, if I'm wearing a back brace, I'll probably be better off, you know? So, a few things with the mud situation, the whole situation in general. So, this, ever since, like, mid-January, I've just been in a real funk. Not really wanting to, like, wanting to get work done, but not doing work, which is just bad in general. But then, like, because of that, like, feeling rushed because my responsibilities are stacking up, and sometimes I'm not particularly aware of each one. I just know that they're stacking up, and so even though I can't see them, I know they're there, and like I'm afraid to even think about them, you know? So one Monday when I went walking, today's Wednesday that I'm recording this, I was feeling kind of that rushed feeling again. And again, and I think I mentioned this, like I didn't even think about going walking, but my mom suggested it, and so it was kind of like a thing where, oh yeah, I definitely want to go walking today. That would be a missed opportunity if I didn't do that. And then the time ticking by, and you know, by the time I got out, it was 4 o'clock, and it's so late, and it's almost dinner time, and I've done nothing today, and it's just, it's bad, you know? We've all been there. So, I was a bit in a rush. Plus, we're having plumbing issues, so I haven't been able to do laundry like usual, so like I had to basically grab something to wear and all that jazz. And obviously the weather is unpredictable right now. Because it was so warm, I had to find kind of warmer clothes, but not good clothes. I mean, cooler clothes, but not good clothes because, you know, it's exercise. I'm gonna smell afterward. These aren't clothes I am going to be wearing in the near future, right? So when I was getting ready to leave, I basically put on a vest, wore my red pants, and was like, you know what? What's gonna happen? Like, nothing's gonna happen to these pants. Like, I'm just walking. Like, it's not a big deal, right? And, you know, I didn't even think about the fact that I was wearing my Uggs and it was so warm out. They were my shoes, and I was gonna wear them. So I go outside, slip in the mud. That really sucks. Because my Uggs are basically ruined, but that's okay, they're really old. But I think that slip in the mud partially might have hurt me. It was a very small slip, but I'm kind of theorizing here that the fall or the impact of it might have hurt my back. But more importantly, I'll go into a bit more detail. When I got home after the walk, my spine hurt so badly. I couldn't even bend over. And something that I left out was that when I got home after slipping in the mud, because I basically went out to walk, slipped, and was like, okay, well, I'm not gonna wear like my Ugg boots covered in mud and my favorite jeans covered in mud. So I went back to my house, changed into different jeans, and went to get different shoes, sneakers. I put my inserts in there for my feet so my back won't hurt. But the problem was is that I couldn't find my good sneakers, so I wore my bad sneakers, kind of forgetting that they were so bad until I felt the impact of them, which was my aching back. Those sneakers are bad in general because like they hang on 1 second. They not only kill my back, but they kill my ankles because I get really bad blisters. So that kind of sucks because I still have those. But I think wearing those sneakers also contributed to my really bad back. Like I said, I couldn't even bend over. Like, I just wanted to do my back exercises that I usually do, and I couldn't because I smelled like garbage and I had to shower. And I was honestly very fearful. Like it's like I have to take a shower, but like I can't even bend over. Like I'm in a lot of pain right now. So I basically just moved very kind of rigidly and was very careful with my movement. In fact, just to put in perspective, like right now on a Wednesday, my back as I'm pacing back and forth is still really hurting me. So not a good sign, right? But anyway. So, all that being said, yeah, I got home, my back was in tremendous pain. It got a little better as the night went on, but like I haven't still recovered. Luckily, I have a chiropractic appointment tonight, so hopefully she'll be able to kind of ease me back into my to getting better. But the problem with scoliosis is that you don't really get better. You're just kind of maintaining things. You know, and as a kid, like I had the back brace, and you know, the same can be said about that. You don't really get better, you're just maintaining the spine. But I was kind of a rare case in that I actually did get a little better. As a kid, my curvature did improve, which is something they don't see often, at least back then. I don't know how things are today. But now that I'm older, it's just not the same. So there was that. And then on top of that, the next morning I woke up and my legs were killing me. And my first thought was like, oh my God, like, am I that like lazy? Like that my legs are hurting? Have I been sitting too much? Like what's been happening? Well, then it occurred to me that it's my upper thighs are killing me because of the walk. Apparently I've been so out of shape since walking previously that like my thighs are killing me. They still are. When like bending down hurts. So that's an inside look in Danielle's physical state, if you will. It's not the most fun place in the world, but alas, what can you do? So I'm gonna cut this part off because, and then I'll continue with the episode because I'm sure there are some people who just want to skip it altogether. So that's the long ass intro. We'll be right back to talk about some more of my favorite books. Welcome back, everyone. If you are here right now and you skipped the intro, you know, you didn't really miss anything. It was just me talking about my health and what became of me on my last episode where I went walking and fell in the mud. All that fun stuff. It's great. But you didn't miss anything. You're fine if you skipped it. Here's the meat of the episode. We're going to continue our conversation, or really my list of my favorite books. And last episode was like very literary titles, where this episode is more focused on young adult-ish fiction. To be honest, I'm not a huge YA fan, and I know there's kind of this stigma around YA being bad automatically. And like, look, I don't want to encourage people to think that YA is bad, but I also don't think that YA is automatically good. Like, I think YA has the potential to do good things, but my problem is, YA just gets so bogged down, like, with being kind of pretentious a lot of times. But again, and it, like, I don't know, but again, like, that's not all YA. YA can be good. I think it's kind of unfair to put labels on things before you even approach them. It's just my experience with YA. So with all that being said, I do have a lot of YA favorite books, kind of. So, excuse me. With all that being said, let's just jump into it. So, hang on. So the book I'm gonna start with is actually one that like I'm gonna keep a favorite book, but I'm conflicted about. But I'm keeping it a favorite book because it meant so much to me at a certain time in my life. And that book is Where the Red Fern Grows by Wilson Rawls. Yeah, Wilson Rawls. So I was initially introduced to this book in fourth grade. My teacher was reading it. I believe she was reading it for pleasure. Because we were fourth grade, so we weren't reading the book as like a text for school. And my, you know, at the time, this teacher was my favorite teacher, and I really looked up to her, so this was like always a book that I wanted to read, and I was a big reader in general. So eventually, in sixth grade, we were assigned to read it. It was at a different school. So, not middle school, different elementary school. Our elementary schools go from kindergarten to sixth grade, the middle school is seventh through ninth, and then high school is 10th through 12th. And if that sounds weird, our high school has about almost 4,000 students. So, you know, you might see why we can't really fit the ninth graders in there. But anyway, we have three middle schools, so it's a big school district, let's just put it that way. So, anywho. But yeah, Where the Red Fern Grows was assigned to read in sixth grade. And to be honest with you, I don't remember. I mean, I had to have read it. I mean, obviously, I did, but like I've said in past episodes, like I never did well reading texts in school. But I read this one. And I don't, again, a lot of sixth grade for me is kind of hazy. Like I remember certain things, but I don't quite remember them so vividly. They just kind of feel like concepts in my head. I feel very disconnected from the person that I was. So it's kind of difficult to go back to that. But what I remember is sitting at my seat reading the book in class and just loving it so much. It reminded me a lot of Old Yeller, which to this day is one of my favorite movies. One of my favorite movies, and it felt very nostalgic to me. The book at the time, I remember, seemed to remind me a lot of like the Poconos, which is where my grandparents lived, so I grew up going there quite often. A very nature-oriented book and just kind of very simplistic book, Laura Ingalls-ish, like you have to trek 5 miles to get to the candy store. It's just this very kind of old school, early America kind of thing, or 1800s, I guess. I believe it takes place in the 1800s. Might be 1900s, I'm not quite sure. But yeah, so I really love the book, but what really got me was the ending. How the author incorporated Where the Red Fern Grows into the story and what it meant as a title. And for me, as a 12-year-old who was very unfamiliar with literature and the rules of literature and the patterns, this really astounded me. I was blown away by how the author managed to include that. And I'm basically going to talk about it right now. So if you haven't read the book, spoilers, maybe skip forward 30 seconds to a minute. But basically, when the character, I believe Billy his name is, has to bury his two dogs after they die, and at their graves, a red fern grows there. And a red fern, I forget, but it's a symbol of something that's important to the themes of the book. I'm forgetting now what that is, but for me, like, that was just so impactful and so surprising, and I was like, wow, this is so cool how the author tied that in. Now, I reread the book 10 years later, basically, and it didn't move me really in any way. It felt very disconnected from what I remember it being, which is a shame because I wanted to have those same feelings. But I think the interesting thing about really any piece of art, whatever medium it comes from, it will impact you in a different way depending on where you are in life. And so for a little while, I did take this book off my favorites list, but I put it back on because I think I would not be the same reader I am today, not the same person I am today, had it not been for that book. And I appreciate it for that. So that was Where the Red Fern Grows. The next book on my list is actually seven books. Do you know where I'm going with this? That's right, it's Harry Potter. So to talk about Harry Potter and what it means to my life would probably take an entire essay collection. And I'm not kidding you. Like, I could literally sit down and write essays on everything about Harry Potter in my life. That it's like so, such a kind of something I've had such a stake in that's been so major to my view of literature that I genuinely like find it difficult to summarize it in a concise manner, but I'm gonna try to do so right now. So essentially, how was I introduced to Harry Potter? I said I'm narrowing it down, but like I am, trust me, I will definitely be trying to summarize this as best as possible. But I talk about always how I heard came to certain books, so that's why I'm doing this. My first memory of Harry Potter was in third grade, when the phenomenon really kind of started. And I remember a kid named Sean, I definitely remember who it was, reading the book, one of the books. I want to say it was the third one, but I don't think the third one was out in America yet, but I could be wrong. And my friends and I, the jerks that we were, kind of teasing him in a fun way, like we weren't bullying him, like please don't get that impression, we were friends with him. I'm like, oh, you like Harry Potter? You're such a dork. Ew. I honestly thought it looked really stupid when it first came out, and I just had no interest in reading it. What ended up getting me though was my parents took my brother and I to Toys R Us. Rest in peace, kind of. I don't think you're gone totally, Toys R Us. And we loved Toys R Us. It was one of my favorite stores as a kid. And I was 10 years old. This was in almost, well, actually, I was almost 10. I was going into fourth grade, so it was the summer. And we were there, and there was this Harry Potter display. And I walked over, and I just like immediately was just so enamored with how the books looked on display and how cool they looked, and I just wanted them so badly. So I really liked paperback books at the time, so I ended up getting the second book. They didn't have the first book in paperback. So that the second book, which ironically I actually still have my original copy, which is just amazing. I wish I would have kept my other original copies of the books, but you know, oh well. But yeah, I still have my original copy, and I remember like it was like almost like right when school started. It was like, yeah, because I remember getting the book and like looking at it on my front driveway and like showing my friends. And then I remember school starting, and like I went to this before and after school program, and I remember like having it at, in the cafeteria, like showing my friends, specifically looking at like the chapter of like the burrow and chapter 2, which I believe is called Dobby. Those images for the chapter titles have a lot of nostalgia for me. And I ended up getting the first copy, or the first book, in a book order. I think my parents bought me the third book in hardcover, which I read in my now basement at my new house. Fourth book. Okay, the fourth book is interesting because my aunt got it for me when I was 11. And the copy she got me, I wish I would have kept, because one thing that bothered me when I was younger is like all my Harry Potter books, I had like hard covers and soft covers, and they were all different sizes. But my hard covers were pretty like uniform, except the fourth book. The fourth book was a hardcover, and it was like small, but yet it was still the same amount of pages as like a regular hardcover. And I feel like that's kind of rare, and I should have kept it, but unfortunately I sold it, so it kind of sucks, but you know, oh well. And then I bought the fifth copy at a Walmart for like a really cheap price, paperback. Sixth copy, I'm not quite sure where I got it, but I did have hardcover. And the seventh book, I actually stood in line in the morning of the release. My grandma took me to Target and I picked it up there. So I never did a midnight release, because the truth is, I read Harry Potter when I was younger, but I didn't love it. You know, I saw all the movies. I enjoy them quite a bit, at least in the beginning. My distaste for them only increased as the more they came out and the older I got. But I ended up, when I was in 10th grade, let's see, at that point I had read 5 of the books, possibly 6, but I'm not certain. But I started rereading the books. So I reread the first 3, eventually read number 7 when it came out, which I believe I was, it was 2007, I believe, so I was going into my junior year. I feel like that's right. Yeah, I was going into my junior year of high school. So then at some point, I don't remember when, but I eventually reread the first 3 again in my sophomore year, but then I eventually continued on after reading the 7th book and reread the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th. That kind of started the tradition of rereading the books for me. In college, I reread them, and this is when the Harry Potter hype was really, really big, because the final movies were coming out. I ended up going to the summer before I entered college, Half-Blood Prince came out as a film, and my friend invited me to go to the midnight premiere last minute. I'd never gone to a midnight premiere before, I don't think of any movie, so that was pretty exciting. So before we actually left, me and her, she lived in like a little community. So we went walking. It was like at 10 at night. I don't know why her mom let us do this, because it's like not the best place in the world, but like, oh well, we were naive and stupid, but we went walking through this community in like pitch black of night. Obviously there were lights up and like streetlights, but we just walked around the entire community, and she wasn't a huge Harry Potter fan, so I basically gave her a summary up till the end of book 5. And I remember it was a good summary. Like, I'm not gonna lie, it was a good summary. But, you know, so we went to the movie and I loved it. I loved Half-Blood Prince when it came out. I loved the movie. I thought the acting was great. I thought as an adaptation it worked well. Now, my thoughts are kind of back and forth. I don't really love it that much anymore, but at the time I really loved it. And it was that movie that kind of got me hyped as a Harry Potter fan and kind of changed the way I viewed the series. So I ended up rereading it at some point. I became very obsessed with it. It became a tradition to reread the books every year. So yeah, and I became even more obsessed with it when Twilight came out, because when I first read Twilight, I didn't like, I liked it. I didn't really have a disdain for it. But what kind of put me over the edge was when my friend said that Twilight was better than Harry Potter. And I remember just getting so mad about that statement that I vivid, like, I just avidly read Harry Potter and just bitched about Twilight. I was kind of unbearable in those moments of my life. But I just was so angry about the fact that somebody would even think to compare the two series and actually say that Twilight was better. So I became like very obsessed with Harry Potter to the point where like I loved it so much that I wanted to learn about it. So it was around 2010, 2011-ish. Obviously, the movies are still coming out. Twilight was still a thing. So I wanted to buy kind of texts picking apart Harry Potter. So I was an English major in college. So for me, I really longed for like a class that would talk about Harry Potter in the way that we discussed other works of literature. Now, unfortunately, that never happened at my college, but many other colleges around that time had either been doing a Harry Potter class or were starting to do that. Harry Potter academia was becoming a thing around that time. So, like, I remember the first book I bought, and I forget who wrote it, Greg something, was called One Fine Potion. And I started to read it and I really enjoyed it, but what stopped me was that the book was just really inconsistent. It basically like would try to credit certain Harry Potter books for like certain quotes and moments and would just like credit the wrong books. It was just like little mistakes where I was like, okay, I can't read this. Like, it made me so frustrated. So I just had to put the book down. I never picked it up since. But that was just my beginning entrance into academia and Harry Potter. Eventually, I started listening to podcasts in my senior year of college, I believe. Yeah. That's really what started getting me into podcasts was I took a class on online creation and writing, and we had to actually make our own podcasts for the class, so it got me into listening to podcasts a lot more. And those first podcasts I listened to were Harry Potter podcasts. They're from MuggleNet, MuggleNet Academia, and Alohomora. MuggleNet Academia is basically self-explanatory. Alohomora was like a worldwide reread of the Harry Potter books, where they would read a chapter a week. And I was actually on both podcasts, but it was MuggleNet Academia I started on, really started my podcasting career, if you will. But I loved those episodes, and that's when I really started getting into the academic side of Potter. I started buying a lot of books, reading a lot of books about it, listening to a ton of podcasts, really loving Potter. In fact, going so far as to 2013, after I graduated college, doing a Harry Potter book club with a friend and like creating my own lesson plans for it. Like, it was intense, like, really intense. So, yeah. So, I know I said I'd be like quick about it, but you know, I'm being as quick as possible. So, my opinions now on Harry Potter, like, have basically been consistently going down the tubes ever since, the Cormac Strikes, the Cormac Strikes series. And then that didn't really do it too much. It was more the Cursed Child play. And that's when the Rowling BS got out, where she said that Hermione was never given a race in the books, which is like, like, so wrong. And then the fan freak out about the fact that a black woman was playing Hermione just pissed me off even more because, like, it just proved that the fan base was just so not as tolerant as they say they are. And then J.K. Rowling, the Fantastic Beasts, kind of put me over the edge. Well, that and Rowling's consistent BS comments, and my views of Harry Potter have completely dwindled, especially because There's like Harry Potter Academia, what it was in 2011 is very different to what it is now, and how we're discussing the books, especially with like our political discourse and with Rowling's just like blatant ignorance, I guess is the word. And so my views of Harry Potter as a franchise, as a book series, it just really kind of dwindled, and it's just not my thing anymore. But again, they're books I really love, and I'll always have a spot in my heart for them. Like Red Fern, they're very important to my life, and I can't really say that I'd be the same reader without them. And so, because of that, they'll always be on my favorite books list. So, with all that, we're gonna take a quick break, so don't go away. We'll be right back. I'm just gonna grab a drink of water, okay? All right, welcome back. Continuing our episode about some of my favorite books. Let's just jump back into it. The next book I'm going to talk about is The Hunger Games, which I kind of feel is a cliche choice on my part, but I can't help it. I actually really like this book. There are very few books I find that make me want to keep reading so much as The Hunger Games did. When I first heard about this book series, I honestly didn't get why it was so popular. Like, I really didn't think the concept of it all was that interesting. But for some reason, and this was still when Borders was around, my copy of The Hunger Games came from Borders, which is sad to think about today. So sad. So my copy was from Borders, and I looked at it and I was like, actually, the premise of this kind of seems interesting, so maybe I will buy it. So I did. And I read it before the movie came out, and I loved it. I absolutely fell in love with it. And the movie I was really hyped for, saw it in theaters. Actually, I really love all the movies, but that first movie I still really like to this day, and I know there are some naysayers, but like about the shaky cam stuff, I personally like the shaky cam. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the book. Don't have any like real specifics I can think of. This might be a favorite book, but it's purely a favorite book because of my experience with it. I do think it's a very well-paced book. I don't think it's a very well-written book per se. Katniss's perspective is just a bad way to go about it in all senses, because it doesn't give you, like, obviously you are wondering what happens, but I don't think there's ever a point where you're thinking that Katniss is going to come to an end. She's narrating. Now, some books would go in the direction of like, oh, somebody else will narrate at the end, but like, there was never a point in my mind where like I thought Katniss is gonna die, because when I was reading it, I was like, either she dies, and then how will the book handle it after that? But most likely she's not going to die because she's narrating. And besides that point, like I said, it's not very well written. It's just very bad. I hate the writing in the book, which is why I think the movies suit it a lot better. It's a very cinematic story, so I think it definitely works better visually versus on the page. But yeah, so it's a favorite, but purely for the pacing, for the themes that it discusses. But as a terms of writing, it's just not very well written. So next, my favorite book is Perks of Being a Wallflower by Stephen Chbosky. So I briefly talked about this book on this podcast. I'm not sure if the episodes are still up. I don't think they are, but this book I originally read in 2011, December, and instantly it had me hooked. It was like one of those books that, like, at the time, like, Tumblr was super popular, and so you always saw quotes from it online, and like, people adored it. So I came to this book loving it before I even read the first page, and I basically loved it all the way through. I loved Charlie as a narrator. His naiveness very much matched my own, and I very much related to that. I loved how the book incorporated a love of music at the time. I definitely think now it's almost a kind of a pretentious look at music, but at the same time, it was something I really loved at the time because I love music, and oftentimes you don't find people, like in my space at least, that talk about music in this, in a way other than like, oh, did you hear the new Katy Perry song? Like, no, I did not hear the new Katy Perry song because I don't give a shit. Like, it meant a lot to me that these characters weren't listening to the top 40 radio, you know? So that really hit me. A lot of books I feel like don't touch on music that much, the way this book like genuinely got the feelings of when a song really hits you and moves you. They got it so right. Or Chbosky got it so right. Kind of came to this book, won't lie, because of Emma Watson being announced to star in the movie. So that was pretty exciting. But yeah, I actually reread it, like I said, last year, and it didn't hit me as hard, nearly as hard, like the first time I read it, but it was still an enjoyable experience. Very good book. Next book is. Oh. It's interesting. I just looked over the list of books I'm going to talk about, and one is definitely not like most of the others. So it'll be interesting when we get to that. But the next book I'm going to talk about is Bridge to Terabithia by Katherine Patterson. So this book, I originally quote unquote read, but really didn't read in fifth grade. We were assigned to read it. What I remember most was we had to do this like reading circle thing where we like discussed the book while sitting in a circle. I really didn't like this book when we first talked about it. I could care less. I specifically remember that circle time discussion, and I remember watching the original movie made about the book, particularly, and again, spoilers, particularly when Leslie dies. The moment when she's about to cross over the water, and that like long shot of her before that, I very much remember that scene. But the book didn't really do much for me. So I saw the new Disney movie of it, which sucks so much. And I guess that made me want to read the better version, the book. And let's see, I believe it was 2012 I read that. And wow, it is so good. I don't trust my 11-year-old self for not liking this book because this book is amazing. The way it deals with grief, the way it captures children and how they interact, the writing, the language of the book is so good. It's just a masterpiece. I love this book so much. And I hate that like so many people will discount it because, well, it's a children's book. But like it is it carries a level of sophistication that like it just because it's a children's book doesn't mean that it is something to be ignored. Like 50 Shades of Grey is an adult book. So does that mean that it's worth our time to read versus this children's book that's legitimately good? Like, it kind of breaks my heart that people won't come to this book because it's meant for a younger audience. I think it has the equal power to move adults as much as children. In fact, adults might get more out of it than a child would, but you know, I certainly did. So, the next book I want to talk about is My Sister Lives on the Mantelpiece. This is a more obscure title. The reason I heard of it, going back to Harry Potter, is because I was really obsessed with Harry Potter when the final movie came out. And so obsessed that, like, I just was Harry Potter all the time. And ended up looking up the cast. And I don't quite know how I figured this out, but I must have been looking him up. The actor who played Hugo Weasley in the epilogue was in a movie trailer, or a book trailer, I should say, for this book called My Sister Lives on the Mantelpiece. And the trailer, if I remember, I'll put it in the show notes, or you can just look it up on YouTube because it's still there. But it's so endeared me. It spoke to me like it literally met me where I was. I talked about last episode about my relationship with Christianity and my desire, not just for Christian art, but Christian unity among people who disagreed with us, especially when it came to different religions and different beliefs. And one important thing about this trailer was that it was directly dealing with this kind of, I'm gonna call it brown panic, or really Muslim panic, where people in America and the UK, because this is a UK story, basically were very against Muslim people just because of the terrorist attacks that occurred. You know, we all know after 9/11, the freedom fries phase that went through the country. I won't lie, as an 11-year-old, when 9/11 happened, my friends and I actively called French fries freedom fries. We didn't understand, you know, we were kids. But I think that that speaks to a larger cultural understanding that, like, when we did that, most of the adults in my life didn't correct me and say, no, not all Muslims are like that, because they too were falling under this panic. And I think Christians in general, kind of, at least when it comes to evangelicalism, they're afraid of that which is different, especially in Middle East countries, which is kind of funny because Christianity is based around the Middle East, you know? But hey, what do I know? But yeah, so this book was having a child whose sister died in a terrorist attack. His parents split up after that, and he's basically dealing with their divorce, dealing with his sister's death, and at the same time making a new friend who just happens to be Muslim, and realizing that his parents could be wrong about their biases. It's really good. It's very simple language. It's not gonna appeal to everybody, but at the time, like, I really at the time loved coming of age stories, so this book really hit home for me. Again, basically met me where I was. Like, all those themes just were in my wheelhouse at the time. So this was a book that was literally made for me at the age of 21. I just devoured it. It's a quick read, so it's not like it will take you very long. I would really encourage reading it because it's fantastic. It's a really good book, from what I remember. So the next book I'm going to talk about is Bambi. Yes, Bambi. I'm sorry I'm not saying the authors. The author of this one, I believe, is Felix something. The other last book was Annabelle Pitcher, I believe. I don't remember the author of this one, Felix something. But I read this book, I believe, in 2013. A lot of people don't know, I think, that Bambi is a novel, or originally was a novel. But yeah, before the Disney movie, there was a novel. And I actually, for all the faults of the Walt Disney Company, which is like, oh my God, that's a whole, that's another book in itself. But there are a few Disney movies that I genuinely think are beautiful feats of animation, and Bambi's one of them. Bambi is very quiet, very contemplative, very stooped, or steeped, I should say, in this very natural aesthetic, and kind of just a very grounded film. It doesn't go over the top. It doesn't try to appeal to a younger demographic for the sake of it. It reaches some artistic heights that I genuinely think many Disney movies at the time just like kind of tried to do, but none of it quite came together the way Bambi did. I mean, arguably Dumbo. I really like Dumbo. And again, arguably Snow White. I think Pinocchio's overrated. Fantasia, I can't even have an opinion on it because I just don't know what to make of that movie. But Bambi is just such an artistic accomplishment that for me personally, when I found out it was a book, I was just so excited to encounter it and see. You know, if it's amazing as a movie, my God, it must be amazing as a book. So I picked it up, and it's so good. It's really good. So I actually don't remember a lot of it. This is why I really need to reread these books that I call favorites, because, you know, in life you forget things, and that's why I came back to, like, Red Fern, Perks of Being a Wallflower, Bridge to Terabithia. Like, I always revisit books because I know my opinion will change, or my opinion won't change and I'll love it. But Bambi, again, my memory's kind of hazy, but what I loved about it was how very similar to the Disney movie, like, very raw it was, in terms of comparing it to Disney. It's not as flowery. My favorite part of the book is this chapter where two leaves are having a conversation with one another. It's beautiful. It's like basically fall changing into winter and the leaves basically dying. And it's going over their death and them coming to terms with dying. It's so good. Oh my God, it was amazing. So I need to reread that. Maybe I'll do it in the spring. But it's a really good book. I would definitely buy it on Amazon or something. It's great. Two more books to go, folks. Two more books to go. Now, we kind of are stepping out of the... Arguably, I guess Bambi might not be considered a YA book. I'm not sure what it would be considered. But arguably, we are stepping out of the YA realm, and we're moving into two different books. One that I'm going to talk about now is... I'm not sure how to figure this book out. Kind of makes me a little frustrated, but I'll talk about it. The next book on my list is really a short story within a book of short stories. The short story is The Body by Stephen King. It's in the collection called Different Seasons, which also includes the Shawshank Redemption story and two others. So, to be truthful, I only read two stories in this collection, Shawshank and The Body. I did not read the other two. So Different Seasons is considered a favorite book of mine, but, like, really what the favorite is The Body. I'm going to talk about that. I feel like I've talked about it on this podcast before, so sorry if I'm repeating myself, but basically when I was in high school, I took a class in journalism. Easily one of the best classes I ever took in my high school career. My teacher was fantastic, and she had us watch this movie called Stand By Me. I'm sure you've heard of it. It's an 80s movie. I think I did talk about it because I talked about, what's his name? River Phoenix, who was in the movie. And I read a book about him last year, so I'm sure I talked about it a little bit then. But basically, we watched this movie, and at the time, I was very kind of strict in my morals as a Christian. The fact that these children were swearing left and right pissed me off. I hated it. We watched this movie. I hated that I was forced to watch it. I was kind of in this mentality of, like, my God, this is the future liberals want. Like, trust me, like, conservative culture, I was definitely a part of it at one point. And that's why it's so scary, because I understand the mentality and it's, like, not fun to reflect on. But yeah, it legitimately pissed me off that these kids were cursing so much. I really hated this mentality that kids to grow up needed to learn to curse, because I didn't curse myself. And I hated that. I hated that, like, oh, you're grown up now, you're probably gonna curse. It's just, I hated that. But there you go. So I really didn't like it, but ended up, like, something about it got me enough that I eventually wanted to read the short story. And I'm trying to remember, I think I ended up, like, watching the movie in college. I definitely talked about this in the podcast, I'm pretty sure. My friend and I had a huge argument one weekend through text message, not the best way to argue, where she just basically, there was faults on both sides. I'm not going to say I didn't do anything wrong, but she just laid it in on me. And I, in turn, went back at her and ended up alone in my dorm room for the weekend, just crying and just miserable, probably the worst I've ever felt about myself, and ended up watching a specific set of movies, Sarah Plain and Tall being one of them, and Stand By Me being one of them, among others. And that was a big turning point in my life, because it was like around a time when like winter was thawing, spring was setting in, and like whenever spring comes, it's like really like fills my soul, you know, like whenever I wake up hearing the birds chirping again, I feel this like feeling that I can't quite describe, that's like so joyous, I just love it. But basically it was like that, one of those weekends where the snow was melting, the weather was in the 60s, 70s, so I could open the window, and it was just gorgeous. And it was a really like healing sort of thing watching this movie, and so it made me want to read the book. So I did read The Body, and it's excellent. I'm definitely going to come to different seasons this year. It's definitely one of my reading goals, because I want to read the whole collection, but also it's always good to reread these books that we love. So yeah, definitely going to be rereading that at some point this year. But yeah, The Body by Stephen King, very good. Which Stephen King, I'm very conflicted about as an author, because on one hand, like, I don't, like, one of my biggest, I won't say hatreds, but annoyances in the literary world is authors like Danielle Steele, who dish out novels so freaking quickly. Like, it's like, there's no way that you could write a good novel in that amount of time. And I could be wrong, because I think John Updike was a really fast writer, but I feel like that's few and far between, you know? And Stephen King's the same way, and like, I feel like some of his books are very commercial in the sense that like they're appealing to the least common denominator, so of course they're gonna get a lot of reads. I also think that the horror genre is very widespread, and so it's gonna get a lot of reads. I respect his opinion a lot of times, but at the same time, I don't think he's this astounding author, you know? But I think in this particular instance, he accomplishes something that's like really, really good, and I think that for that thing, I have to give him credit. I can't ignore the fact that he wrote something genuinely good, and, you know, he is a good writer when it comes down to it. Maybe not all the time, but, you know, this time he did. And finally, the last book I'm going to talk about today that's on my favorites list. Again, this is the one where it's like, oh, one's not like the other. It's A Game of Thrones by George R.R. Martin. Definitely not a YA book. Certainly not a really a coming-of-age book, though I guess arguably you could talk about coming-of-age being a theme in the books. So it is definitely a part of this book, but it's not central to it, you know? But, okay, so I feel like a lot of people are going to think this is a cliche answer, because Game of Thrones, the TV show, is so popular. So I want to quickly talk about why I came to this book, why it is a favorite. Obviously, I'm going to talk about why it's a favorite, but I want to stress that when I have books as a favorite, trust me when I say that it's not like to say like, oh, it's popular, so it's good. Like, no effing way, okay? Like, Game of Thrones, the TV show, I really hate it the more and more I watch it. The beginning seasons I actually do love. First and second season I think are legitimately good. After that, I don't like them very much. But I don't know what year this was. I want to say 2011. You know, Game of Thrones was, I believe, in its second season. I could be wrong. But it was really getting a lot of discussion and praise and all this stuff, so I decided to watch it. The first episode kind of freaked me out because, you know, the beginning scene is very scary, and I was like, wait, is this going to be like a scary show? Because I don't know how to feel about this. I'm not a huge high fantasy person, so, or a fantasy person in general. Like, I like Harry Potter, but I didn't read a lot of fantasy books. So, I was timid to come to the book series. That's why I started watching the show first. Watched the first few episodes and pretty much like loved it right away. So decided to pick up the book. Unfortunately, was spoiled about Ned's death, which kind of sucks because it was such a surprise to everyone. I kind of wish I would have gotten that surprise as well. But you know, it is what it is. But yeah, about 4 or 5 episodes in, I stopped watching and switched over to read the book. I read the book in 2012, in August or late July, early August. Very, oh my God, so good. I remember we were on a cruise at the time. It was the first cruise I ever took. And like that cruise was just so, like my memories of it are so steeped in me reading a Game of Thrones. Like, I loved this book so much. I loved George R. R. Martin is really one of the best writers of our time. You know, you can jab at him for certain things, but I think it would be ignorant to say that he is not brilliant in many regards. He is able to approach several different characters and give them their own voices with ease. His writing style is so good. And I legitimately like, there's no other author out there that I can think of that writes quite as well as him. And I think what I appreciate about A Game of Thrones, the series of it, but also this first book, is the nuance it gives. Like, the reason I don't like fantasy a lot of times is that I think it's very black and white. Like Lord of the Rings, like I tried to read those books and I'm lucky I made it through Fellowship. Like, I don't really like those books and nothing has really curved my opinion on it. I will watch the movies, but like they're 2, 3 hours long. I don't mind making that commitment, but books are a completely different monster. So, but yeah, so what I appreciate about Martin's writing style is that he still has those high fantasy elements, or the fantasy elements, but he manages to create a much more human, I guess, psychology behind it. The characters he writes, he just does such a good job with them. You know, from writing art, the differences between Arya and Sansa, I mean, wow, like it's just so good. And of course, I really love Ned. I know after post first book, it's easy to pick apart why Ned failed and died, but I think one thing that stood out to me was reading Ned's perspective as not just this kind of ignorant nobleman, but like how he was as a gentle father, you know, toward Arya and Sansa. I just, there's so many nuances to this book that I really appreciate, and it's something that when I have returned to it in the past, because I did listen to the audiobook, 2017, I believe. Yeah, 2017. It's really good. Really, really good. So, yeah. Definitely Game of Thrones. Oh, the clock. I better walk away. So, with all that being said, that is the end of this episode of Books on the Move. I hope you enjoyed it. I certainly did. Hopefully, I'll record more of these episodes because I'm trying to take walks every day. So, if I do that, I'll be recording a ton of episodes. I just need to keep reading because I haven't been reading very much. So, we'll see if I can get back on track. But with that being said, thanks for listening. I will put the show notes in the description of this. So, you go to that URL. It's usually at thisisdanielle.net. And if you go to the reading corner section, these episodes will be there. All right. So, that is it. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you all later. Goodbye.
Yay!